Well, hello there. Welcome to a Thursday here on What Matters in North Carolina. My name is Mark Shiver. Glad to have you listening. We're so thankful that you've taken the time to listen to What Matters in North Carolina and get yourself up to speed on all of the latest in things that are important to our state and to you and to your family. And so before we get going, I'd like to remind you that we're on Twitter at What Matters NC. I'm at Mark Shiver, at Mark Shiver. You can yell at me there. And we're on Facebook, What Matters in North Carolina. Feel free to like our Facebook page. And just really excited because we're going to talk about some cool things today. One of the things that I have been really digging into and learning as a conservative is that for some reason, conservatives have gotten a bad reputation as not really caring about people, not really giving back to people. I remember growing up, when I was a kid growing up in South Carolina, that a lot of folks were Democrats back then. And you would hear them say that the Republican Party was the party of the rich man, you know, and the hardworking blue-collar folks were Democrats. And so this is the environment and the mentality that I grew up with. Well, suddenly, in the early 80s, late 70s, early 80s, particularly with the advent of Ronald Reagan, it seemed as if there was a great shifting by the Democratic Party on a national level. And a lot of Southern Democrats, myself included, became Republicans, you know, and not to borrow a tired mantra, but, you know, I'll say it like everybody else. I didn't leave them. They left me. Their national platform became just unbearable. Well, what's interesting, let me just put a pause right here. What's interesting is I was having a conversation one time for an article I was writing about voter behavior, and a lot of Southern Democrats will vote Republican in the national election, but they still feel that locally the folks are more in tune with the way that they believe and the way that they feel. So that's why we see a lot of Democrats voted across a state like North Carolina in local elections. So it's fascinating. A lot of people may not have changed parties like I did, like my parents said. Folks, when my mom and dad changed parties, that was, you know, that was an epic event because my dad grew up in rural North Florida. And when I'm saying dirt poor, I mean dirt poor, depression and hardworking farming family. And these folks were raised to be Democrats. And, you know, the National Party left them. And so, but interesting tidbit there about voter behavior. The reason we see in the South Republican votes cast for president, but oftentimes a lot of votes in state for Democrats is because they feel like the national platform has left them, but yet they still feel that the folks that they know in their particular state are more aligned with the way that they view things more conservatively, and that local Democrats may not be as liberal as the national ones. Now, we have seen in North Carolina, for example, in 2010, the Republicans gained the majority in the General Assembly. And so a lot of shifting in voting behavior and in party affiliation. People don't feel as inclined to vote for all Democrats or all Republicans. But it certainly has changed in the last 6 to 10 years. And I think we're going to see voting behavior continue to change. Now, somebody like our good friend Susan Myrick here at the Civitas Institute would say, well, Mark, you know, people are people and the trends are pretty consistent. And I understand that. But I do believe that, for example, this election that we're looking at right now, we've never seen anything like this before. A businessman with no political experience is the Republican nominee for president. I mean, he came out of nowhere. All of the establishment folks, all of the inside the Beltway folks, conservative, moderate, no matter who they were, they got steamrolled. I mean, Donald Trump just plowed right through the Republican Party. And Hillary Clinton, establishment, you know, government her whole life, almost lost to this, you know, this old guy from Vermont. And that's no slap at him being old, but I mean, you know, Bernie Sanders was bringing forth an ideology that was radical. I mean, way out there. Socialism and free college and free this and free that. But he almost won. And so here we have an establishment politician in Hillary Clinton and just a guy in Donald Trump. I mean, you know, I think everybody grows up believing or dreaming, little kids dream, one day I'll be president. Well, I can guarantee you that Donald Trump, with his ego, may have thought, yeah, one day I'll be president, but I'll bet you he didn't believe it, really. I mean, it's not an easy thing to do, but one thing led to another, and a perfect storm of voter anger and people fed up with the establishment, and next thing you know, here he is. He is, you know, on stage with the Democrat nominee, and they're having a debate three or four nights ago. So things have really, really gotten crazy as far as politics goes on the national level here in the United States. Here in North Carolina, you know, business as usual. We've got a Republican governor, Pat McCrory, against a liberal opponent in Roy Cooper. We've got incumbent Richard Burr, senator, chairman of the Senate Armed Services Committee. I think he's been there for 16 years or so. We've got Deborah Ross, who served in the North Carolina General Assembly. Also has a very liberal track record. Our good friend Donald Bryson yesterday, in fact, told us about that. He's with Americans for Prosperity. And if you missed that, you can certainly download that podcast at freedomactionnetwork.com or also in the iTunes or Google Play stores. But we have basically what we see whenever statewide or national elections come along in North Carolina. You know, we see typically fairly liberal Democrat against a Republican. And in the Council of State races, we have Lieutenant Governor Dan Forrest, who, by the way, has been out with the people almost literally every single day for 4 years. I cannot think of a lieutenant governor who has engaged more with the citizens of North Carolina than Dan Forrest. Now, he's running against Linda Coleman, who he defeated in 2012. Not by a lot. And so that race could be interesting. I'm always puzzled, and this is no smack to Linda Coleman and no endorsement of anybody, but just, again, you guys know, if you've listened to the show, that I love politics and voter behavior. And here's Linda Coleman, and she was from Knightdale originally, and she won a House seat there. Sam Ellis had been the representative for years, and then she lost, and she became, or no, she didn't lose. She was appointed to head the State Personnel Commission, and all of a sudden, she's running for lieutenant governor 4 years ago. And so here's somebody who has really virtual anonymity. I mean, she's not that well known. I mean, when she ran for the House in Knightdale, I had no idea who she was. And, you know, that's where I'm from. So it's amazing to me how people can suddenly find themselves in a statewide race and get support. I think a lot of times it's people don't even know who they are. They just, oh, here's the Democrat or here's the Republican. Let me vote for them. But, you know, how about this? Remember the Republican primary for Secretary of State, A.J. Dowd, spent $150,000, I think it was, and Michael LaPaglia raised $5,000. I think he spent like $3,500 or something. I don't remember the exact amounts, but LaPaglia won. I mean, really? How does a guy spend $150,000 and lose to a guy that spends, you know, $3,000 to $3,500? Voting behavior, folks, is fascinating, and I love to think about it and talk about it. But I was looking online, and James Johnson on Facebook posted an interesting little kind of an Excel thing that is pretty informative. And again, we're not endorsing any candidates on this show. But this is a good comparison. For example, the headline here says, the difference between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton, judicial appointments to the U.S. Supreme Court. Mr. Trump has said he will appoint conservative judges. He has also said the judges he appoints will be pro-life. Mrs. Clinton is expected to appoint liberal judges and has said she will appoint only pro-abortion judges. So there's a comparison of those two on that issue, immigration and border security. Mrs. Clinton wants to substantially increase the number of Muslim refugees without changes in the vetting process. Mr. Trump wants to place a temporary ban on Muslim refugees entering the United States until the screening process is improved. Donald Trump said immigration security is national security. So kind of a difference of opinion there. On terrorism, Mr. Donald Trump claims the United States is at war with radical Islamic terrorism. Mrs. Clinton refuses to use the word war on radical Islam, refuses to use that term. It says America can successfully negotiate with nations that oppose the United States. There are a couple of others there. Second Amendment, we know that Donald Trump supports the right to keep and bear arms. Hillary Clinton believes the government has the authority to regulate guns much more than they do now. And abortion, we know that at one time, you know, Donald Trump was pro-abortion. He has since committed to being pro-life. Hillary Clinton, of course, has always been committed to abortion. So there's just a handy little spreadsheet kind of thing that breaks down five issues. And wherever you fall on that spectrum, that might be helpful for you to go through your decision process and who you're going to support in November. I would encourage you to be sure that you are registered to vote and that you will vote in November, because this is one of the most important elections of my lifetime. You know, we all feel that way every 4 years, but this is really, if you're a conservative, it's very, very much a contrast between the two candidates. As I just read through some of the things that each candidate has indicated as far as their positions on things like nominees to the Supreme Court and abortion and all that. Really, it's a big year for conservatives. It's an important year for conservatives. And tomorrow I'm going to read you something that a priest said that that may really get you upset. At least I hope that it does. But we've got a great show planned for you today. We are going to talk about something that, as I said at the beginning of the show, I've been looking into, and this notion that conservatives don't want to give back to the community. We've got a guy here in the Triangle area who is doing just that in what I think is a really cool way. And then conversation with Bob Lipke of the Civitas Institute about the surging demand for choice in education in North Carolina. So thank you for listening to What Matters in North Carolina, and I hope that you will enjoy today's program. Joining us now on What Matters in North Carolina is C.J. Bouchard. He is owner of many of the Planet Fitness locations in the Triangle. C.J., welcome to the program.
Thank you, Mark. Thanks for having me.
Well, we've been talking here on What Matters in North Carolina over the past few days about free markets and capitalism and how conservatives have often gotten a bad rap because there doesn't seem to be a lot of giving back to the community. And I saw an article about something that you and some of your partners are involved in, and I had to get you on the show because I think this is really, really exciting. You are, in fact, giving back and giving back to kids. And why don't you tell us a little bit about this STEM program that you guys are excited to be involved with?
Absolutely. Love to explain about our Zaniac campuses. It's a newer franchise that started a few years back with a group out in Utah headed by Paul Zane Pilzer, who's an economist and an author. And Paul had created a Zane math system, Zane Prep, and was looking to branch off on that and go from just a digital format to definitely having some type of a retail center set up. And he and I had a conversation in 2011, I believe, and we started looking at the concept of having a school type of a setting and branching out into more of the STEM system. So the science, technology, engineering, and math, and STEM also includes arts as well. So we've brought that into a center, and it's a K-8 program, after school and track out program. Excuse me. We're excited to bring it into the Triangle, and there's one location that's already open in North Carolina, out in Asheville. They're doing extremely well, and it's an exciting time for these young kids to take these brilliant minds and bring them into a setting where they're able to have the teachers, which are basically high school students and college students that are in the same curriculum and teaching these young minds how to program, how to do 3D printing, how to CAD file drawing and Legos and tinkering and, you know, the hardware and the software, and they take this in a group setting and no more than five students in a class, and teach them how this curriculum and how to be productive. It's unbelievable to see.
Now, this sounds very exciting, and our guest is C.J. Bouchard talking about the Zaniac program that he is involved in bringing to the Triangle. And I can't help but think, C.J., that kids, you know, if they're not in a traditional classroom environment to begin with, and you're teaching them, you know, something that I would think as a kid would be very intriguing, like 3D printing and all of that kind of stuff. I think kids are really going to love this, and I think it's going to open up new opportunities to not only down the road in their own, you know, opportunities for jobs or that sort of thing, but I think it will help them in their day-to-day school process as well.
It really does, and you know, my son is 14, and probably 5 or 6 years ago, he was into the whole Minecraft thing, and he still is. He still likes to do that as well. But when Minecraft really came out, and we were using the computer and allowing him to build things, and seeing him get excited about building a city from scratch. It's a blank white canvas, and then he starts to create these blocks, and then he understands the concept of you know, the levels of finance, where you can have money to basically buy diamonds or gold or these things, and it's all play. It's, you know, there's no financial transactions there, but he starts to understand the concept of that and what it takes to save up for something and then create something. And that was one aspect of it. And the other aspect of it was where there's these mods that start getting created where you can download and program into your own computer certain aspects of a game that would enhance the game. And at, you know, 9, 10 years old, he's actually learning how to code and program, because the Minecraft's an open platform where they can do this. And it was funny, I was actually traveling a couple weeks ago, and I met with an individual that works for Microsoft. And he's pretty high up in Microsoft. He happens to be in their Xbox division. And funny enough, Minecraft is owned by Microsoft. So
right,
we started talking about this, and he said, "Man, this is unbelievable what you're telling me that you guys are doing with these kids." He said, "Do you know what we're paying these kids that we're recruiting out of these higher learning, you know, colleges, MIT and so forth?" I said, "Man, I have no idea." He said, "We're paying them a $75,000 bonus, sign-on bonus.
Wow.
Plus they're starting at $150,000 a year. And that also includes shares. So so these guys are actively looking, Microsoft's actively looking for these students that are coming out of college that understand programming and coding. And I think it's something that you know, the public doesn't even understand, and these parents don't understand that if these kids are excited about doing this type of work, then they should just as much they should teach their, you know, kids sports and, you know, and how, you know, the team aspect should work. This is something that they should be looking at as well. So very exciting time, I think, for our youngsters to get involved with this.
Our guest, CJ Bouchard, he's one of the partners and ownership of many of the Planet Fitness locations around the Triangle. And we're talking about something I think is really exciting. When people go into business and they turn a profit, you know, it's often been thought of and by those who try to generate class envy and this sort of thing that, you know, all you're doing with your money, CJ, is buying a bigger boat and a bigger car and a bigger house. And really, you guys are saying, well, wait a minute, you know, we've been successful. Let's do something to help our community. And I really think that is commendable. And not only are you, you know, just stroking a check, as it were, but you're actually providing an opportunity for kids to learn and learn in an environment that, you know, will help them to walk away from this experience better prepared, as you just illustrated, to make significant income down the road if they continue, you know, to develop those skills. I really think that this is exciting. And what do you think will it take for other businesses and business owners to say, you know what, I need to do something like that? And not necessarily the same thing, but I need to be giving back to my community.
Well, first of all, I think it's going to take some of the politicians out there to get on board and understand that, you know, as entrepreneurs, we want to reinvest in our communities. We want to be able to give back, and we choose to do that. We don't, A, want to have to be told that we have to do that. That's number one. And B, we have to have an atmosphere in our political arena, in our society, in our areas of business that allow us to be capable to do those things. I mean, you know, in North Carolina, we need to be able to have the lower taxes and be able to, you know, give back. I mean, most of the entrepreneurs that I know, the men and women that own businesses, are looking to open more and more businesses, but it needs to be easier. It needs to be an easier way to do that. You've got to be able to stop, you know, the sanctions and the laws that are stopping us, you know, from being allowed to open up, you know, multiple businesses and spend, you know, and spend that money. We want to reinvest in our businesses at this point in time. And we're looking to looking to invest in not only just for us, it's not only just the K-8 students, but it's also the 15 to 20 employees that we're going to be hiring who are college and high school students. And I think it's a tremendous, it's going to be tremendous for them to be able to put on their resume that they're working for a group like Zeniac and showing that they're helping these K-8 students and understand that the skills that they've learned in the past are being able to be utilized as well as being a mentor and a teacher. So I think it's extremely important, that the politicians and you know, legislators, they understand that if we're able to have the finances to continue to put more money back into society and into these businesses, that we're going to do that. You know, most of the entrepreneurs, like I said, that I know are looking to open up more and more businesses. We just need to be able to do that.
Well, CJ, I think you bring up an excellent point. One of the, pillars of capitalism and free market economy, for those of us who really believe that that's, you know, the best way to operate economically in a society. One of the pillars is that, you know, government intervention and interference, whether it's through higher taxes or regulations, they can really put a stranglehold on economic growth and on people who may want to find themselves, you know, maybe they're dependent on the government now, but they've got an entrepreneurial idea. I don't know if you know this or not, but there are hundreds, literally hundreds of occupations that require entrance exams. They require classroom instruction. They have hefty fees in North Carolina. And so somebody on the lower end of the income scale who may want to, you know, do like you, start a business, the hurdles are sometimes literally insurmountable because they can't get through the door because of the fees and the, you know, all the requirements to get into a particular line of work. So I would say that your point is well taken, that the government can often get in the way of not only starting a business, but expanding or growing, as you pointed out.
Yeah, I agree 100%.
So in terms of the future, there's one Zaniac location now, I believe you said in Asheville?
That's correct. I mean, there's about 10 locations across the country. But in the future, you know, we're looking at, you know, we have signed on for three locations, but we're looking at multiple areas, not just in the Triangle, but all over the state.
And when do you expect to be up and running and have these sure. these places in place?
Our first location at Parkside Town Commons in Cary is going to be open by the end of this year.
Wow.
So we're working on our final construction plans and have an express review scheduled for the first week in October, and we plan on starting construction right after the express review. So that location should be open by the end of the year. That's the goal. And then the next two locations we're looking to have open within the next 8 to 12 months.
And CJ, how will kids be able to participate? Obviously, you'll only have a limited number of seating starting out. Where will the pool of kids come for? Will kids sign up? How will you get the word out and that sort of thing?
So right now there's a website. You know, it's ZaniacLearning.com, and you can go online. You can actually see the website, and our webpage is up for Cary already. And our both of my partners in this endeavor, Joe Pepe Jr. And his brother Matthew, and then his dad's also involved, who's my business partner in most of the locations, Planet Fitness as well. We like to do all of our businesses together, but we've made it to where Matthew is actually going to be in charge of the campuses, and he's going to be local and hitting up all of the schools and talking to the headmasters and counselors at all of the local schools and discussing what our format's going to be, and you know, through the webpage, through social media, and also through direct marketing to our local, you know, areas within probably 2-3 miles of the campus. We're going to be advertising pretty heavily, so everybody will be able to see. And we'll start actually accepting students to join here in probably the next six weeks.
Wow!
And we'll start a pre opening campaign where kids and moms and dads can bring their kids down and see what the Zaniac campus is going to be like. It's going to be a beautiful center. They're going to walk in, they're going to see, you know, 15 IMAX stations. They're going to see 6 or 7 different classrooms where the kids are going to be able to be in the classrooms, and everything's going to be glass. So they're going to be able to, you know, literally write on the glass.
Wow.
And just like, is, you know, if they're in a science lab, be able to utilize that. The really cool thing about the Lego sets and the programming is phenomenal what the program's going to be able to do. The kids are going to be able to program a Lego machine that will actually be able to see it on a table moving in it's like a lunar capsule in it, and it goes from the docking station to they program it to go 15 degrees to the right and then go forward, you know, 4 feet and touch the satellite, and unscrew the satellite so it actually opens up and then back up and then do all this. So they're actually seeing everything, you know, in motion, what they're doing. And they're able to get in and work on Minecraft right away and start programming and 3D printing. They'll be able to print things out and actually, you know, take them home with them and see. So it's very exciting for these kids. And, you know, for the girls, there's actually fashion design that we're doing. So they're able to come in and design clothing and, you know, it's pretty neat.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Well, I tell you, CJ, I do a good job. I remember when my kids were little, I was trying to build an airplane with Legos and didn't have a lot of success. So I think you think you're out of my league here. But this sounds very exciting. And the point I want our listeners to take away is that folks like you that have gotten into business and you're participating in a free market economy, you're a living testament to capitalism, that you can and in fact are doing something to say, okay, you know, I've been blessed, I've been fortunate, here's a way that I can help others. And I think that's fabulous. So serious tip of the hat to you, sir. Thank you very much for being our guest here on What Matters in North Carolina. And we look forward to all of the great work that the Zaniac program is going to be able to do to help kids.
Thanks a lot, Mark. Appreciate you having me.
There is Liberty in Beer. Finally, a show that ties economics, philosophy, and regulations with the brewing industry. You would be surprised at how laws affecting the craft beer industry have huge effects all over North Carolina. Join the Free to Brew show Saturdays at 1 p.m. with me, your host, Greg Polscher, where we dive into topics on distribution, ABC sales, federal and state laws, and even beer sports all over your favorite pint of beer. Find out how this seemingly progressive idea is dependent upon the ideas of liberty, capitalism, and property rights to ensure its survival and longevity. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Free to Brew NC. You can't have beer without liberty, and you can't have liberty without beer.
Always a pleasure to welcome back to What Matters in North Carolina, the education policy analyst for the Civitas Institute, Bob Lupke. And Bob, welcome back to the program.
Good to be here, Mark. How are you?
Good. And I wrote an article recently talking about the demand for school choice. I call it surging in North Carolina. It definitely seems to be tracking upward in a pretty significant manner. And I just thought, rather than get into a heavily academic, you know, drilling down into numbers and statistics today, that we could just chat a little bit about school choice. It seems to be in North Carolina something that is on the minds of parents. And I think you would agree it's something that, there's no turning back, I don't think.
No, I think actually the growing support for school choice has been one of the most underreported facts of the last several years. We poll monthly, we don't poll necessarily every month on school choice, but quite frequently, and the numbers we've seen over the last several years have all indicated strong growing support for school choice, not only amongst Republicans, but across all political parties. Also, that support is also strong geographically across all areas of North Carolina.
Well, in this piece I wrote, I talked about, you know, when the headlines scream that graduation rates are still not where we'd like them to be. And remember, Senator Barefoot last year tried to get a bill passed where community college teachers would go into high schools and teach kids how to read, you know, that were graduating seniors. Yeah. Something's wrong with the traditional program. And I think parents are finally catching up to that reality and saying, hey, wait a minute. You know, our kids have been in this traditional public school program all this time. They're trying to go to college. You can't read. And they're looking for other options.
Yeah, people are looking for different options. And people want to be smart with their money, with their taxpayer money. And they have a right to have access to quality education. And unfortunately, there are a lot of people that are stuck with not very good options. And school choice is a remedy for that problem. Thankfully, over the last few years, we've seen expansion in the charter school program. We've
right.
seen expansion in the opportunity scholarship program. Those have expanded because the public demand for those options is there, and also because they see that kids that get in those programs, they do well, and the programs work.
I remember, Bob, back in 1984 when I first moved to North Carolina, the homeschool movement was really getting its legs under it, and they were lobbying the legislature for a lot of permission to do a lot of different things. But now, 32 years later, it's vibrant, growing, and it's also part of the school choice.
That's right, Mark. The homeschool movement in North Carolina has actually been exploding in the last few years. Some of that has been driven by opposition to Common Core.
Uh-huh.
Some of it's been driven by the fact that parents have decided that they can provide a better option than traditional education programs can. And an interesting fact that I don't think most people are aware of, but I think this happened about 2 years ago, the actual number of homeschool students in North Carolina eclipsed the enrollment of private schools in
wow.
North Carolina. So that gives you some indication that homeschool enrollment in North Carolina is strong and growing.
So what you have then, I guess if you look at a kind of a palette, you have traditional public school taking a large segment of the spectrum, and then homeschooling growing for those people who either can't afford or don't want to choose private schools. Then you have opportunity scholarships for those on the lower end of the income scale who do want to try to take advantage of a private school. Maybe they're not set up to homeschool, both parents working, whatever. And then you have charter schools, which are public schools, but have a little bit more flexibility in their academic programs, and they're not as encumbered with some of the regulations that the traditional public schools have to follow.
Yes, that's been a growing array of options for North Carolinians, and we think that's a good thing. Most people think that's a good thing.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because we've seen, as I said before, the demand is there for educational options. And as we talked before, I think it's important to note that if you have a child in preschool, you actually have more choice.
Oh, yeah, this is fascinating. I never thought about this.
You have more choice because if you apply for the NC Pre-K program, you can receive a state voucher and you can have that child enrolled in a private school pre-K program, of which the state provides, you know, vouchers for. And, of course, the program has worked fine. Also, if you are in higher education, I mean, you can receive a state grant, and if you choose to enroll in the UNC system or at a private school like Duke or Meredith or High Points, any one of those schools, you also have choice that's facilitated by, you know, the state. And people seem to get along quite well,
yeah.
You know, without any problem. But it just seems to be that when we, you know, children from K through 12, we want to limit those options. And it's like a sandwich. You know, we have choice on either end, but in the middle, the K through 12 sector or cohort, whatever you want to call it, we're still fighting for choice. And,
yeah.
And people want it, and we're hoping that it's going to grow.
Yeah, you'd mentioned that, and I'd never thought about that, but, you know, people are free to take their kids to a private daycare all day long. Nobody
That's right.
moans and complains about that. And, you know, if you can afford it, or as you said, you can get tuition assistance, you can go to Duke. Nobody screams about going there. But boy, you know, mention doing something different
yeah.
than going to a traditional public school. And boy,
it is kind of an odd the way we think about that, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, we welcome choice in any other area of our lives. You know, in fact, if someday somebody came along and said, well, you can choose whatever car you want as long as it's a Ford, you know, we'd be up in arms over
yeah.
that, because we believe it's our right to, you know, to choose and to, you know, buy whatever car fits our needs. But We don't readily apply that in the area of education, and it doesn't make a lot of sense.
Our guest is Bob Lupke, and we're just having a conversation today about school choice. He's the education policy analyst at the Civitas Institute, and a little more relaxed today, not giving you all the facts and figures, but an important issue here in North Carolina is school choice. And Bob, I had Daryl Allison on the show, of course, Parents for Educational Freedom in North Carolina. They did a poll, which I thought was fascinating, that 8 in 10 African-American voters believe state lawmakers must do more to expand educational options for families in our state. So school choice is not just for white middle-class North Carolinians, but it goes all over the spectrum to include, you know, whatever race and whatever income class. It's an issue that affects everyone and that everyone is interested in.
That's right, Mark. I did see results of the poll, was encouraged by it, and it's a finding that we frequently find, you know, in our polls, which is that minority voters and minority parents are frequently some of the strongest proponents of school choice, and for obvious reasons that they're impacted, you know, significantly by the quality of schools as well.
You know, this is sort of tangential, but I was talking to John Gibbs on Tuesday about the stuff going on in Charlotte and how really the people who are you know, rioting and really making the most noise about injustice in the African-American community are not most people in the African-American community. And we talked about how most people, regardless of your race, you want to go to work, raise your kids, give them the best educational opportunity that you can, and hope that their lives turn out better than yours did. It doing what's right for your kids doesn't have any racial boundaries or scope. And so I'm not surprised that 8 in 10 African-American voters, you know, think that the state needs more options for school choice. And I think that it just speaks to the fact that regardless of who you are, or your income class, or your race, you want what's best for your kids.
Yeah, and it highlights, you know, the real shortcomings with the current system.
Yeah.
Which is, we like to think, you know, that we have an inclusive public system, which, you know, implies, you know, like we can go wherever we want, and that's not true.
Yeah.
What it really is, it's, you know, our options are circumscribed by where we live.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not truly public. It doesn't mean, you know, that we can access, like, we can't access schools in other locales.
Yeah.
In better neighborhoods. So in that sense, it's really a myth to think that it's truly public and truly serves all. It only serves those in immediate neighborhoods.
Well, here's a point to that, kind of bolster what you said. And of course, my kid's in college now, but when he was in the fifth grade, going into the fifth grade, they built a brand spanking new elementary school where I live. I mean, it was beautiful. And it's like a mile from my house. And so I called I called the town manager. And I said, hey, you know, can I enroll my son in this great new school? And he said, no. I said, what do you mean? He said, this school was built to bring in kids who have English as a second language. So my choice in my neighborhood was limited right there because of some bureaucratic decision that we're going to, you know, build this great new school, but we're not going to let people in the surrounding area attend there. We're going to bring other kids in for a specific purpose. So even if you live in a certain neighborhood, public schools, the choice is limited, as you say.
Welcome to the land of social economic engineering.
Yeah, no, exactly. And that was very frustrating.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm sure other parents have experienced the same frustration. You know, as we know, what's been going on in Wake County, even more so a few years ago, about kids being transported 45, 50 minutes on buses, you know, so that numbers in certain schools could, you know, be more attractive to the powers that be. we can talk long and you know, in a compelling fashion on the benefits of local schools. I think parents need to, you know, need to fight more for being able to not only have their child go to a school that they want to attend, but to make sure that that school is close to where they live.
Yeah. Here's another anecdote from my experience. When my daughter was going into high school, Knightdale High School had just opened, and we had gone on a tour there, and it was unbelievable, Bob. The teachers were like disinterested, and other schools that we had looked at, because she was highly academically successful, and we looked at going to Enloe and one of those schools like that. But it was unbelievable. They were like just sitting around, didn't get up to greet you when you came to their booth or their table. And we were just very, very disenchanted with that. So we were fortunate enough to get over to East Wake, which had never really had a reputation as an academic juggernaut in Wake County. But they were in the testing program of having four small schools and within that school. And she and my son both went into the School of Health Science, which turned out to be fabulous. Now, they since have disbanded that program, I think, this year. But the point is that the teachers and the administrators play such a huge role that even if you're trying to get along in the public school system, you can become disenchanted with what you encounter. And to close this anecdote, that year and several years after at Knightdale, tremendous fighting and gang involvement. The principal left. They got a new principal. Things supposedly settled down. And I ran into some kids the other day in a coffee shop, and they had Knightdale stuff for, and so I chatted them up, and I said, yeah, I remember years ago there was a lot of fighting there and stuff, and apparently things are a lot better. And they all shook their heads and said, man, there's fights here every single day. And so, as it turns out, I'm kind of glad my kids didn't go there. But that's disconcerting. Do you think, and I know your answer is going to be yes, but I mean, I think some parents don't want to send their kids to public schools because they're kind of afraid.
Yeah, and it's always, you know, we always hesitate to paint with a broad brush.
Sure.
But what we're seeing here is, and we're never, I mean, I think the public schools do a good job in many neighborhoods, but the reality is that there are areas where they're failing.
Yeah.
You know, like any large system, there's always areas of improvement. One of the areas we can improve that is by offering additional alternatives.
Well,
which whether it be traditional private school options, et cetera. And, you know, the anecdotes that you share are, I'm sure, you know, other parents have the same stories.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that, you know, they feel uncomfortable about sending their kids to a local school, which is tragic, you know, because you want your child minimally to be safe. You know, obviously to be in an environment where they can thrive academically,
mm-hmm.
where they feel safe, where they can make friends, where they can grow.
Yeah.
And if they don't have, basically, if you can't check those off, you know, you're going to be troubled. Your child's going to probably be stunted developmentally, and there's going to be a big price tag on it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, even nationally, Bob, we got two presidential candidates, and Donald Trump talked about his education plan, and this is not to endorse Trump, obviously, but just to give you an example. Even he recognizes school choice. He said he would set aside, and obviously he can't just do that, the Congress would have to approve it, but he said he would set aside $20 billion to distribute among the states to expand school choice. So
$20 billion is a lot of money.
Yeah.
You know, and it would, I mean, it, should that be approved, it would have a revolutionary
Yeah,
on
no
schools, but I was encouraged by, you know, his statements on school choice. I would welcome them again, not an endorsement, but
yeah.
I believe something that, you know, we can all support, and I think would be great for families and good for the country.
Well, in contrast, And again, just showing that school choice is has a national attraction. But on the other side, Hillary, she's so, you know, the support of the teachers' unions and the status quo. She may really like school choice in her heart, but she certainly can't come out publicly and say that. And that leads me to my next point, Bob, is the status quo is just fights so hard against school choice. And I think that at the end of the day, it's all about money. It's let's keep those state dollars coming in, particularly here in North Carolina. I think, what, over $8 billion in K-12 in the last budget and growing. It'll be more this coming biennium, I'm sure. And there's a lot of money at stake. And so when you rock the boat with things like opportunity scholarships and expanding charter schools, somebody's worried, you know, about their job, I guess.
Yeah, people can understand that.
Yeah.
Because the ground is shifting. I believe that we're in a era now where there are going to be significant changes. I really think with regards to the public, we've won the argument on school choice.
Yeah.
Now the fight is in the implementation and how, you know, these programs are going to be defined and where we're going to move forward, you know, quickly. But amongst the public, I believe we've won that fight. Now it's just a matter of what shape those programs are going to be.
Two final things. Number one, the General Assembly appropriated an increase of $10 million a year in the Opportunity Scholarship Program so that by 2026, funding will be right at $135 million a year. Now, I believe that the folks who are
That's the hope. I mean, that was treated as a guideline, but as you know, this legislature cannot bind future legislation.
That's the plan.
Yeah, the plan is to expand it to that point.
And my point is, I don't think these guys are stupid and doing things, you know, just throwing things up against the wall. I think they recognize that there is a demand.
Yeah.
And they are looking ahead and saying, this demand is going to continue to grow, and we want to hopefully, you know, have a plan that will take care of the funding for that over the next 10 years.
Yeah, I applaud the legislature to responding to that increased demand. And every time that's happened, I mean, demand has gone down.
Yeah.
And they're responding to what the public wants. That's good. There'll be additional choices for parents, for students, and I think everybody wins then.
Finally, Bob, can't remember his name, but one of the guys in Wake County, big article about a month ago, homeschool surging in Wake County. And the guy that they talked to from the Wake County Public Schools said, you know, this kind of puts the pressure on public schools. It's almost like a competition. And I thought about that. Do you really, and I think this would be a good thing if it were true, but do you think the traditional public school system will feel any pressure from the growing demand for school choice and maybe try to respond and do a better job?
I think Wake already has tried to. I don't know if they've been successful, but I know just in the last couple of years, as you've seen those enrollment numbers on charters, on privates, and homeschools come out the last couple of years, they have impacted the trajectory of Wake's growth.
Yeah.
And if you watch, you know, what's going on in the school board, if you watch education coverage in the NNO, et cetera, you'll see that this is on, they're aware of the numbers and how the numbers are changing. I think that's a very good thing, that they are forced to be more responsive to their clientele, you know, the families in Wake County. I think that's a good thing.
Yeah.
And I hope that as things move forward, they'll change what they need to change. And wherever students go, whether they go to the public schools, private schools, they'd have the best option that's available to them and be able to choose it.
Well, as conservatives, competition is usually a good thing. And so hopefully it will translate to being a good thing in the traditional public school system as well. Bob Lubke, thank you for your time. We always appreciate it here. And thanks for being our guest on What Matters in North Carolina.
Good to be here, Mark.
Well, just two guys kind of kick back talking about school choice. Enjoy always an opportunity to talk to Bob Lubke of the Civitas Institute about education. And school choice really is on the rise here in North Carolina. People want it. They genuinely care about what's best for their children. And, you know, as we finished out our segment there, competition is a good thing, and hopefully it will spur the traditional public school sector to do a better job. And that would hopefully translate into doing a better job for the kids and helping our students learn more and learn better, if that's grammatically correct. Well, Senator Jerry Tillman, as you know, represents Randolph and Moore counties in the North Carolina State Senate. He has one of the better newsletters that his office sends out every week, and I was just perusing the most recent, and he included in his newsletter the Kiplinger report from their August newsletter saying, forecasting for America, growing demand for Made in America products. Gee, I wonder where that's coming from. Sounds like a Trumpism. But U.S. offering a stable political environment? Where did they get that? Maybe after the election. But I like this one. Much of economic expansion will occur in the Southeast, North Carolina, South Carolina, Tennessee, and Georgia. And we have already seen, if you will recall, we talked in depth with Brian Balfour about how North Carolina's economy is just not once or twice, but just surging. Like a wave at the ocean, I have described it. One good news report after the other, and it's really amazing. And Kiplinger recognizing that North Carolina is a business-friendly climate, tax reform, lower corporate and individual tax rates, business regulatory reform, you know, translating to less restrictive regulations, have made North Carolina a good place to do business. And that will continue to attract new firms and expansion of present firms in the near future. Now, folks, you know, the left can stand up on the soapbox all they want to and cry, oh, we don't have any business anymore because of HB2. Well, let me tell you something. Business is business. And folks are going to come here and they're going to build and they're going to expand because they recognize that North Carolina is a business-friendly climate. And regardless of those few, by the way, very few, that may have decided to be more concerned about political correctness than they are business climate and fair treatment of their employees and lower taxes and less regulation, people are going to come here. This state is going to continue, as long as it's on the path that it's on, to grow economically and to see businesses come here and expand and locate, and that's a good thing. And education and school choice is also a huge part of that. Again, folks, I don't care what race or gender or background you are, people want what's best for their kids. And if they businesses can see that a state has a strong environment for school choice and educational opportunities for kids, that's going to weigh in a very positive way to businesses deciding whether or not they're going to come to this state. So you add all of these things together, and all you can conclude, if you're reasonable and rational, is that the course the state is on under conservative leadership is a good one. And yet there are those who would say, oh, we want to go back. We want to go back. You know, I think Roy Cooper said, you know, we want to take North Carolina back. Well, please don't do that. I, for one, don't want to go back to paying higher taxes. I, for one, don't want to go back to headlines screaming that the state budget is $3 billion in the red. I, for one, don't want to go back to higher taxes and more business regulation. So, you know, I just don't get it sometimes. But I'm proud of our state. I'm proud of the leadership that is in our state. And I'm looking for continued good things to come here in North Carolina. Speaking of continued good things to come, I think we had a great show today. Tomorrow we're going to have another fabulous show, and look forward to that. Also, remember, you can find us on freedomactionnetwork.com. Tell your friends and your family. You can also find us in the iTunes and Google Play stores. Thank you so much for listening to What Matters in North Carolina, and can't wait to get back with you tomorrow.